Hello, this is the Online Resilience Podcast with me, Louisa Street, and Professor Andy Phippin. We're discussing all aspects of young people's online lives and giving practical advice on how to support the young people you work with. Music is by Rue Pestock. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Online Resilience Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about our favourite subject, which is harm reduction when it comes to online resilience. We're going to be specifically looking at sexting and how to talk to young people about sexting with a harm reduction approach. This is very close to my heart because this is pretty much going to be the focus of my PhD research. So I thought I'd start off just with a little bit of an intro about why it's so important to have a harm reduction approach to sexting when we're talking to young people. I think most people are probably kind of coming around to the idea that wearing a short skirt or walking home alone at night isn't the cause of rape and sexual assault. Those things are caused by people who rape and sexually assault other people. And so we're kind of starting to be aware of victim blaming discourses and a bit more aware of how we can kind of challenge that. For example, people are more likely to be harmed by someone they know, and it's less likely to be by a stranger. But unfortunately, when we talk about sexting, we do tend to fall back into this victim blaming trap. And the reason that we are so prone to doing that is because we talk about sexting as something that young people should just not do, because if they don't do it, then they're not going to be victimized by other people sharing their images on without their consent. But that does blame the victim if their images are shared on without their consent. And with adults, we would call that non-consensual intimate image abuse. But with young people, the victim is as likely to get into trouble for that. Andy, I can see you nodding, so I'll come to you and say, what are your thoughts on the victim blaming narrative?
Yeah, I've seen it for 15 years and, original research around sexting in about 2007 2008, and at the time we were told we couldn't talk to young people about this sort of thing because it was so shocking and we might be encouraging them to do it by talking to them, which is kind of interesting when reflecting on a harm reduction approach to education anyway. So we surveyed them, and one of the things we said was, you know, what can adults do to help, and they came back with not judgmental responses and listening to disclosures. Exactly the same sorts of questions 15 years later, young people are saying exactly the same things, which suggests to me that the approach we've taken over this time has utterly failed. So whenever you, because you know, it's quite funny, there's lots of people who've really bought into harm reduction in a big way in terms of drugs and alcohol awareness and those sorts of things, but there are still people that kind of go, oh yeah, but if people take drugs and then they get harmed, then you haven't reduced the harm, have you? So there are still some people that you know, challenge a harm reduction approach.
Yeah.
With bizarre logic. I was speaking to a senior leader a while ago who's got some frustration because his head teacher was saying, you know, we can't be more progressive with our messaging. We just have to tell them not to.
Yep.
I said to him, well, what we do know is that hasn't worked for 15 years. Literally, I see victim statements from the Revenge Fund Helpline of adult victims of image-based abuse who deliver those prohibitive educational messages as a way to blame themselves for the abuse
they
received.
Yeah.
So you will see statements like, I know it's my own fault, I shouldn't have sent him the images in the first place. So we know it doesn't work. So what's wrong with trying something different?
Yeah.
That actually supports victims rather than telling them that they've done something wrong, or if they hadn't have sent the images in the first place, the abuser wouldn't have been able to send them on further, which just bizarre.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
But it's not uncommon view on these sorts of things, or the other classic, but it's illegal.
Yeah.
We've talked about that quite a lot.
Yeah.
The iteration of this podcast, but that's just an excuse for not actually providing better support. Well, yeah, you only have to spend 10 minutes and everyone's invited to see a disclosure where someone says, oh, I was being abused by someone and I know they had images of me and I can't tell anyone about it because I know what I've done is illegal. So
yeah.
Well done. Those educational messages have made that victim of abuse more vulnerable and in a more isolated position because of that educational message, which was probably delivered because we didn't really want to go near this topic, and which is just easy to just tell them it's illegal, because then it's their fault if things go wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really interesting, actually, kind of drawing the parallel with, you know, drugs and alcohol education. So there's advice that not all schools necessarily follow, but there's advice that says it's not actually that helpful to have former drug users go into schools to tell their quite dramatic story about, you know, how they used a lot of drugs and then how they stopped using a lot of drugs. And part of the reason it's not that useful is because young people will quite often hear those stories and be like, yeah, but that won't happen to me. And again, I feel like sometimes when we focus too much on the actions of the victim, it's very easy for young people to be like, well, yeah, but I'm only sending this image to someone I trust, so this isn't going to happen to me. And also, you know, again, just so that I can get my broken record point for the day, if we only tell young people it's illegal for them to send these messages, then that message becomes totally invalid once they turn 18 and it is legal for them to send those messages.
Well, it's always one of my significant frustrations, first of all, around the law. We talked about the law before. It's a very old piece of law. It was never developed in the way it's used now. If you're 17 and send an image and someone non-consensually shares it further, you could potentially end up with a criminal record for doing that. Extremely unlikely these days because most police won't get anywhere near that. But by the letter of the law, correct, if you're 18, you're protected in law.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of like, we know this is a myth. It's an odd one, but it doesn't seem to be changing. I mean, I don't think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I did some training with a mat a while ago, and I sort of said, don't do the sexting assembly, don't do the don't send nudes, it's illegal assembly. You know, it's a complete waste of time, it doesn't work, and here's the evidence for that. And one of the SLs on the call, because it was on Teams, started smirking. So I said, oh, you've done the sexting assembly, haven't you? And she said, yes. And it was for 2 year 8s. And I said to the young man at the end of it, oh, you know, what did you learn from that? And he went, what, so if I send a dick pic, I can't go to Disneyland? Which I just thought was a wonderful way of both, like, dismissing it and trivialising it at the same time. It's kind of like, how is that going to help anybody? Like, you know, you're not going to be able to get visas if you've got a criminal record for it. We know it doesn't work. And, you know, going back to harm reduction approaches around drugs, if you look at the harm reduction principles, one of the fundamental things in that is accept this happens, and accept it happens for a number of different reasons and has different social factors and has different stakeholders involved in these issues. Exactly the same. You know, I can remember, must be well over 10 years ago now, a young man saying to me, year 9s, you know, most sexting that goes on, he didn't use the word sexting because no one under 40 uses the word sexting, but most sexting that goes on, you never get to hear about because it's consensually exchanged between two people during a relationship, and when they split up, the images are removed. It's when things go wrong or things happen outside of consent that you get to hear about it.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, that really neatly brings us to how you can use this harm reduction approach with young people when you are talking about sexting. And I think the most important place to talk about sexting is in conversations about consent, because, you know, we're getting to a point with relationships and sex education where there is more discussion about consent and how, you know, you hopefully people will be aware of the sort of ideas of, you know, consenting to one thing doesn't mean you're consenting to everything. Consenting to something once doesn't mean you're consenting to it in future. And all of those things are really relevant with sexting. So who have you given consent to? What have you given them consent for? And I think the really important thing with discussing that with young people is that it's really good to talk about those things when you're actually liking someone enough to want to send them an image, because when you still like each other, people are going to be much more open to saying, like, yeah, I'll delete these, you know, I'll go through and delete them every day or every week or however often, you know, each person agrees to, and make sure they're not in my deleted items folder, make sure they haven't been uploaded to my cloud. And if you do that at the beginning and establish those boundaries at the beginning, then that person doesn't have those images if things go sour, and then when you hate that person, they're much less likely to agree to deleting those images. And
yeah, no, absolutely. It's a weird thing that you will have RSC around consent, and it'll be very clear and very well thought through and very well laid out, and then you go on to the exchange of nudes and all of a sudden any thought about risk mitigation goes out the window. It's like, well, you know, you sent them to them, what do you think they're going to do with them? And it goes back, it's like you agreed to send someone an image, you didn't agree to send someone an image and then go, oh, and then do what you want with it. It shouldn't be a bizarre conversation to have.
No.
And you know, it's a bit like, oh, I agreed to having sex with you once, that doesn't mean you can pop around whenever you like to have sex with me from now on. No one would say that's a, you know, a reasonable expectation of consent. So why is it when we're talking about the exchange of images, then that becomes an acceptable message to give to young people? Well, you know, what did you think they were going to do with them? Yeah. You're talking about the message should be you trusted that person and you consented to the exchange of images. But at no point, you know, I had an article reviewed a while ago and the reviewer came back and said that consent with intimate image exchange is a grey area.
Right.
And, I replied to the editor and went, I've heard this excuse from both police and abusers, so I'm going to ignore that comment if it's all right with you.
Yeah.
It's like, it is not a grey area. You know, you're doing something for one scenario. That doesn't then mean that for any other scenario you have granted that consent. It just seems bizarre to try and express it in that way.
Absolutely.
If you approach it from a sort of rational rather than a moralistic and the I can't believe young people do this perspective, which I think is, you know, we talk about it quite a lot. One of the challenges with online harms is the bias of, well, I wouldn't have done that, therefore I think anyone that does do that is engaging in problematic behavior and they need to be told so.
Yeah,
it was different 20 years ago, but
yeah,
the issues of consent and relationships and what happens in relationships was still the same.
Absolutely. And actually that really reminds me of a conversation that I had with a group of young people when we were talking, we're doing some focus groups for a new tool that we're developing, and two young people in the group were really disagreeing about sending images, and one of them was saying, like, I don't think you should ever do it because it's risky and blah blah blah, and another person in the group got really like angry and was like, it's not the person who takes the picture's fault if somebody else shares it, that their trust has been violated, and they're the ones who are in the right. It's the person who's sharing it who is in the wrong. And what is always really apparent to me in those situations is the young people who aren't engaging in that behaviour will tend to say what their teachers have told them to say. And the ones who are have probably thought about it from a range of different perspectives, as they've thought, like, am I going to send this? And do I trust the person that I'm sending it to? And do I want to put my face in the image and all of that kind of stuff? They're going to probably have a much more nuanced idea of the issue. And I think for that reason, when professionals say, like, oh, well, this young person that I've spoken to, they're of this opinion, it's like, but did you give them that opinion?
Yes, I know. Yeah, it's wonderful, isn't it? Like, please, can you tell us the things that you've been told in your online safety class?
Well, yeah.
Well done.
We saw exactly the same thing with the dark web when we were developing the digital resilience tool, that the young people who had used it were like, you know, there are risks to it, but I think they can be managed. And the young people who hadn't used it were like, it's really bad. People just use it to buy guns and drugs.
And again, isn't that the same with consumption of drugs and all those sorts of things as well? It's like, you shouldn't do it because it's really bad. And you've got a few people in the group going, well, I do.
Yeah. But also now I'm not going to tell anyone that, you know, if I have a problem, because everybody thinks it's really bad. And, you know, what we want is to create an environment where if a young person has an image shared on, they can seek help without feeling like they're going to be told off, because then we can help protect them from things like bullying and blackmail and coercion and all of those
far, far worse things. Absolutely. I think the other side of it is what harm reduction isn't is using shame as an educational tool as well.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's on sexting or whether it's on drugs or whether it's on access to pornography or whatever, starting from a position of, well, you shouldn't do this because it's morally wrong.
Yeah.
And if you, you know, unpick some of the political discussions around pornography, you see this language, this disgusting content and this harmful stuff. And
yeah,
not really a good starting point, is it?
No.
Particularly given that, you know, I sometimes rather jokingly, if I'm doing a training talk or something with 100 odd people in the room, go, right, hands up who looks at porn then? And, just to see whether, and then after about 2 seconds, go, no, I'm joking, don't put your hands up. But the fact is, you know, there's going to be a lot of people in this room that probably do, if the statistics by the mainstream pornography sites are anything to go by. So using a shame perspective on that or whatever else. And I know, you know, if you look at stuff like the IWF reports, they will talk about a lot more self-produced content being detected. That doesn't mean the images being exchanged by two teens suddenly end up on a paedophile channel or something. That content is probably self-produced in that the young person has been coerced into doing that through grooming.
Yeah.
And the classification, because no one else is in the image, it was self-produced and it probably was taken by the young person. But that doesn't mean that someone who exchanges a couple of images with their partner will, by some internet magic, end up on tons and tons of these different things. It can end up going far further afield, and there are instances, but I think we need to bear that in mind, because sometimes it's like, yeah, but the IWS says there's more self-produced content. It's like, yeah, but that's produced through grooming.
Yeah.
Not produced through consensual sharing amongst a couple of teenagers.
Definitely.
The flip side of that would be that if we actually taught good cybersecurity skills, if they were using cloud storage and things, then they're far more likely to protect their images from other people accessing them.
Yeah.
But that's again part of risk mitigation, that is a fundamental part of harm reduction as well, in that, you know, how do we equip people to do things in a less risky way,
rather than
going, well, I'd have never done it, it's terrible, the people that do it.
Yeah.
So, why do I always put on that funny posh voice when
internal bias going on?
there's some deep-rooted experiences of my own education there, probably.
I think that's a really important point. I think when we're talking about consent and we're talking about who's at fault if images get shared on, it is the person who has non-consensually shared the image. And I've been reading a really brilliant book recently called Sexting Panic, and I'll put the details of it in the show notes, where there's a lot of discussion about this idea that actually we quite often talk in the sort of passive voice about the person sharing images on. We'll say someone had their images shared on, rather than saying this person violated their partner's privacy by sharing images on. So I think trying to put that as the, you know, the headline, that if we're blaming someone for this, it's the person who non-consensually shared images. Kind of talking about routes of getting help. So obviously if you're working with young people, they might come to you, they might disclose that something has happened. So what are the routes that professionals can use to help young people in that situation?
Well, I mean, the first thing to do is not say that's your life over with, you're never going to be able to go to Disneyland now.
Yeah.
That's a good starting point. I mean, I think the UK sexting guide now says there's no need to include the police unless there's evidence of coercion or whatever. If the young person thinks that the images might have gone further afield, the police can sometimes be quite helpful. There's also the report Remove that the NSPCC run, or NCMEC in America use the Stop NCII stuff. I mean, they basically have the same approach, that they will hash the images, and then if people do start sharing them further, they will be taken down. The Professionals Online Safety Helpline has got a wealth of experience in supporting professionals around these issues. And, you know, if they think that things are appearing or being hosted someplace, because funnily enough, most of the major platforms don't want to be including content which would be considered illegal on their platform. So, you know, they will contact the platforms and get stuff taken down as well. That's the really frustrating thing of the message. Oh, well, now it's out there, there's nothing you can do about it. That's a nonsense.
Yeah.
There's plenty that can be done to make sure those images aren't shared further.
Definitely.
I think the Professionals Online Safety Helpline has got a wealth of experience of that. Or you know, if you do have trusted, supported police, I mean, the vast majority of incidents would be recorded with no further action with police anyway.
Yeah,
and they can be quite supportive. The other thing I should say about looking at it from a risk management perspective is that there's absolutely no problem with talking about the law from an educational perspective.
Yeah.
But do it in a complete and critical way.
Yeah.
Explain the fact that it came about for one reason, now it's being applied for another reason, which is why sometimes law problematic, and this is what they've tried to do to address that, because nobody wants to criminalize young people for consensually sharing images.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, you can still talk about the law, but it seems to be just the focus on Section 1 of the Protection of Children Act 1978 as the defining characteristic here is not the full picture.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've written at length about this sort of thing, but folk are always welcome to contact us for clarification on those sorts of things as well.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's really important to for us to be kind of clear that we're not saying if that's all your school or organisation or whatever has done when you've talked about sexting, you've just talked about the law. The DfE, their guidance is just tell young people that sexting is illegal. That's pretty much the beginning and end of it. So nobody.
But it is appalling. God.
But yeah, there's no. Currently, I don't feel like there's a real gold standard for.
There's quite a nice resource. I mean, Seth Rich for Learning do So You Got Naked Online, which is quite a nice resource because it's very fact based and it's very supportive of those sorts of things. There's a couple of things like that are quite useful as well. But this goes back again to the fact that professionals don't need to have all the answers themselves.
Yeah.
And can reach out across networks and stuff and ask for help rather than thinking this is something they have to completely solve themselves.
Absolutely. And so you mentioned a couple of places where people can go to get support for having images removed. Obviously, professionals, Online Safety Helpline is a really good place to start if you need help doing that. You also mentioned image hashing, which is a really, really interesting thing. And I'm going to ask you to explain it because I don't think I have a good enough understanding of it to explain it.
So the basics of image hashing is that every image is essentially just a bunch of data. So it's a composition of lots of little coloured dots that all have values. So they are the way that the coloured dot is represented will be the colour of it, and based upon the various tones and things. And basically that's all an image is a massive bunch of numbers to represent those dots.
Yeah.
So if you then apply something called a hashing algorithm on it, which is just a piece of maths, it will generate a unique value associated with that image, because the chances of two images having exactly the same data in them, so producing exactly the same hash, would be extremely unlikely.
Yeah.
So if there is an image of you out there and you hash it and then go to, for example, the Internet Watch Foundation and say, right, there is an image of me out there. Here is the hash of that image. Can you add this to your hash list? Because people at the Internet Watch Foundation have massive hash lists of all images that have been categorized as illegal and then hashed. And then if someone tries to post that image and that image gets hashed and you look down the hash list and go, oh no, this has already been categorized as illegal, it will be blocked from being posted.
Which is amazing.
what I like about it is because everyone, I mean, we banged on about AI before, but don't worry everyone, it's not going to replace everybody's job. it's not even very good for writing essays, but it's a simple piece of technology that works. You know, that there are some issues with it in that you might have some instances where people will start to inject badly formed hashes into hash databases and things, but as a piece of technology it works and it's simple. And yeah, you can say that manipulation of the image will change the hash, that's true. But that's not a reason to say, no, it's not good technology. So you have Stop NCII, which is a partnership between South West Rich Learning and Meta, who are doing this for image-based abuse of adult victims. But NCMEC, who are the National Center for Exploitative Missing Children in America, have announced they will use the same technology for young people in the States.
Amazing.
The NSPCC report remove tool uses a slightly more cumbersome approach of doing it, in that you have to prove your age and then you have to share your images with somebody else and then they will hash them.
Right.
But it still ultimately uses the same hashing technology to make sure that if someone then goes on to share it and the image has been hashed and on the IWR hash list, it won't be shared, it will be blocked.
And that means it can't be uploaded to porn websites or Facebook or like any signed up.
Most of the major platforms will signed up to. Well, certainly most of them will sign up to the IWF hash lists. Increasingly, they'll use StopNCII as well. Yeah. You know, if you look at StopNCII.org, it gives you a whole list of partners and everyone from MindGeek to Meta to Twitter, those sorts of things. Like I said, people don't want to host illegal content on their platforms if they are. Responsible is an interesting word because, you know, there are certain politicians would like us to believe that the tech industry is full of evil, nasty people. I don't think I've ever met anyone who's evil and nasty in the tech industry, but there you go. I don't hang out with the people at the top. But yeah, they, you know, they want to behave responsibly because otherwise they'll have far stronger regulation or be shut down and stuff.
And they won't be able to sell advertising or take payments.
So, you know, there is a reason they want large populations on their platforms and they want to be able to operate those platforms. So, and hosting illegal content will probably mean that they get shut down.
Yeah.
So this idea that, oh, yes, they all host it, they all know it's there and they don't know anything about it is just a nonsense, really.
Yeah. I mean, I've probably mentioned it on here before, but there was a podcast that came out a couple of years ago now that was called Hot Money, and I'll put the link to that in the show notes as well, that was all about how the, you know, the porn industry is essentially regulated by Visa and MasterCard, who are extremely conservative. So again, like the controls that are in place aren't necessarily being applied by the right people for the right reasons, but they are there. And yeah, the
porn is one of the most ultimate representations of capitalism, and it's been controlled by capitalist mechanism. At the end of the day, it's quite funny, really. But, you know, yeah, Pornhub pulled 10 million images a couple of years ago because it was, they couldn't verify that everyone in those images and those videos had consented to them being there. And they were having a lot of pressure from Visa. So they thought, well, we'll do this rather than, you know, trying to contact all these people and go, please give your consent. So they pulled a huge amount of content.
It was a similar thing. I don't know if people were kind of aware there was an issue with OnlyFans last year, I think, where they said, oh, yeah, we're going to stop people uploading pornographic content because their payment provider had basically said, oh, we don't want to be taking money for porn. And they, I don't know how, but they figured out a way around it and didn't have to remove all of their porn.
Didn't they propose they could address it, that they've got stronger age verification now so they can...
They're
more, they can, I wouldn't say guarantee, but they are far more likely to have controls in place that people under the age of 18 can't upload content anymore.
That's right, because it was concern about underage images. Brilliant. Well, hopefully that has given people some ideas of where to start a harm reduction conversation about sexting. So I'm just going to summarise our points. Talk about sexting in relation to consent. Focus on if you're apportioning blame to anyone, make sure that that is on people who are non-consensually sharing images. And if someone is concerned that an image may or has been shared on without their consent, there are routes that you can go down to make sure that isn't shared more widely, starting with the professionals online safety helpline, which I'll make sure the details of are in the show notes. Andy, do you want to add anything before we move?
I think the most powerful thing you said there was talk about sexting.
Yes.
That's the thing that comes off strongly from young people for a long time now. I think that, you know, the young people that I spoke to back in the early part of the century will now be parents and have kids of their own and stuff. Yet we're still doing the same things. So let's try something different. And talking about it is a good place to start rather than just going, don't do it, it's illegal. Because that doesn't work. All right, definitely. We know it doesn't work. We should probably stop doing that now.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's something that I know I've said on this before is young people don't differentiate between their online lives and their offline lives. So implying that their relationships won't have an online element or a digital element, I should say, is, you know, is not reflective of how they use digital media. So excellent. We'll leave that there. We're going to be back in a couple of weeks with another episode where we'll be looking at online hate and conspiracy theories and taking a harm reduction approach to them. We'll see you soon.
Cheers.
That's it for another episode of the Online Resilience Podcast. If you liked it, please tell someone you know who might also enjoy it. You can share on Facebook, Twitter, or even just pop a link in an email.